from Big City. There's some folks visiting with us from Colorado.
Believe it, man. Merle Haggard. You better, by God, believe it. Turn me loose, man. That's one I like to sing now and then. Yeah, I sure do. Hey, this is Terrible Tommy down here in the bunker in north central Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, where we still sell Ethel and Standard here. Yeah. And we're right next to Terrible Tommy's world-renowned weapons of mass destruction used and abused equipment yard, where we bondo up all the bullet holes and crap, fix the tank treads and all that kind of stuff. Give you a free paint job with every purchase. You ladies, you want a pink tank, you want a pink armored vehicle, we'll give it to you, no problem, free. Yeah, we've been moving them out here pretty good. I think there's something in the wind. I think the people out there begin to think, boy, we better start getting ready for something, because I think the IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, may be coming in here. Not the Chinese, the IDF. Yeah. It's a beautiful day here, July the 26th, 2014. However, it started out with a beautiful orange sun coming up in the east, and now it's getting a little overcast. So they're predicting some rain around here, and I never get too upset when it's going to rain, because rain's good for agricultural country. And it's been nice and cool back here. I hear from She-Wolf out there in Southern California, it's been hot and muggy and Well, back here, we've had like they used to call it Indian summer. It's been nice and cool down in the 60s even. And it's been great. So anyhow, we stole that California weather when I came out here and I stuffed it in a suitcase. Yeah. Did some black magic. Yeah. I had that witch, Marie Laveau, I sing about quite a bit. Yeah, from down in the Blackwoods in the swamps of Louisiana. I had her fix the weather up for us. Yes. She does a hell of a lot better than the baby Jesus, I'll tell you that. Now, don't forget these T-shirts I got around here. Buy them for your friends and everybody. You know, they can go anywhere they want to go with that because initially people see you with them. They won't know what resist.com is and they won't know what the symbol is. They may find out later, but you could wear that in a crowd and they may be... That unequal sign, they won't be wondering about that. But anyhow, $10. Postage paid in the continental United States. Yeah, they're blue. They're pretty blue, yeah. So anyhow, let's get them out of here. I got some Matt Hale T-shirts still back there, too. I'm going to have to take another inventory. Oh, Matt Hale's busy working on his book that he's going to be coming out with. Well, that should be quite interesting, the ins and outs of the trial and all that kind of stuff. It always helps to have a little more knowledge about that stuff. But since he was in Chicago, he should have called up old Clarence Darrow and had him come over there. He could have helped him out like he did the Haymarket boys from the Haymarket riots. Well, I guess Clarence is gone now, so we couldn't get Clarence Darrow. You know, the other day, a little book fell off the shelf into my hands, and it was Mark Twain's book, Letters from the Earth. And I love that book. And if you haven't read Letters from the Earth by Mark Twain, I'm telling you, he is funny, he's sharp, he's smart, and he just writes some hellish good stuff. And if you're not into religion or see the problems of religion, you'll love that book. Letters from the Earth. You can pick it up probably about any used bookstore for almost nothing. And, boy, I'll tell you, you won't be sorry if you haven't read it before. They asked Mark Twain once, they said, you know, he said, how many Jews in this country? And they said, about 25,000. Mark Twain says, hell, I know that many in this county. Well, Mark Twain, he was a heavy drinker, a heavy cigar smoker, and a riverboat man. He sure was. They might have called him one of those hippies back in the day when he was running around. He was pretty wild. You remember that butchering that went on out in Wichita, Kansas a few years ago? Well, they did it again. They did it again. The Kansas Supreme Court on Friday, probably almost all white, overturned the death sentence of two brothers convicted in the 2000 execution torture murders of four people, white people, on a snowy soccer field in Wichita, ruling that the trial judge erred in refusing to conduct separate penalty phases for the two men. Can you believe it? Sure you can believe it. They'll go out of their way to give a nigger a break on capital cases like this. And some of the other cases, too. Jonathan and Reginald Carr were sentenced to death in 2002. Their December 2000 crime spree, known as the Wichita Massacre, including the kidnapping of three men and two women, all white, in a home invasion that included rape and sexual mutilation. The five victims were shot in the head. One survived. The court affirmed some of the convictions against the two brothers, including murder, but vacated the death penalty for both of them, sending the case back to the district court for new sentencing. The Eighth Amendment was violated. Boy, they worry about the Constitution when it comes to these niggers. If it was you, are you kidding? In this capital case, when the district judge refused to sever the penalty phases of the proceedings. Well, if he knew that was going to result in this problem, why did he do it, the stupid idiot? The court wrote in a ruling, The Supreme Court said the mitigation cases of the two men were at least partially antagonistic, so they should have been treated separately. Ha! And said that the joint treatment allowed evidence against both of them that might have been excluded in separate proceedings. Six judges on the 7-member court joined the majority opinion on overturning the death penalty while one dissented. All the victims were white. Both defendants were niggers. Well, maybe, probably not, but maybe we'll luck out and somebody will take care of business on the inside. But I doubt it. I doubt it. Hell, it's white judges on these damn courts that overturn this shit. And it's, well, anyhow, and the white sob sisters who say, oh, please don't kill my nigga. He's still a child of God, man. Well, I see another bunch of wagon burners, Mongols, have given Ted Nugent the finger. Maybe he'll learn his lesson. Another Native American casino cancels Ted Nugent's concert after complaints from the tribal community. Ted Nugent has lost yet another gig with the Native American casino thanks to the rocker's various free speech charges in his comments. This time a pair of concerts at the Emerald Queen Casino in Tacoma, Washington, which had been scheduled for August 2nd and 3rd. Well, that's a liberal, so-called progressive nest of up there in Washington State. There's liberals behind every tree. The First Amendment gives people the right of free speech, but I think racism is intolerable and not acceptable here. See, that's that old thing. I believe in free speech, but the Puyallup Tribal Council president, Lawrence W. LaPointe, that don't sound much like an Indian name to me, told the NBC affiliate in Seattle, quote, we've been getting lots of complaints from the community and other organizations, unquote. LaPointe also added, quote, I don't want to take away his right to say what he wants to say, but we don't need it here. Oh, I see. Well, anybody up in these areas that maybe goes into these casinos, don't do it and tell people not to go there, you know. But they're not going to do that. You know, the whites are so jaded and corrupted, they don't care. They go along with anything. Among the complaints from the tribe members about Nugent were photos he has posed on his own face account, which he has worn a traditional Native American headdress. Well, they should be complimented by that. I condemn him for it, wearing a damn wagon burner headdress. This is on top of his infamous comment earlier this year when he referred to President Obama as a subhuman mongrel. And I'll bet you I can find half the Indians, so-called Indians, the Mongols, that will say the same thing. This idea that the Indians are so pro-black is bullshit. Among the complaints from tribe members about Nugent were the photos that he has posted on his Facebook. Oh, I read that once. In this case, sadly, the tribe told the station that in addition to complaints about Nugent, they've also received outright threats from some individuals, including one about bombing the casino if Nugent performed. Oh, there's a real ACLU type. The Puyallup tribe's decision comes 2 days after another tribe, the Coeur d'Alene Idaho tribe, canceled a separate Nugent concert that was set for early August at their casino. Nugent has not responded well to an apparent wave of cancellations, referring to the people agitating against him in a separate case, which was not connected to so-called Native Mongols in that instance, as unclean vermin. Yeah, well, you learn to hang out with white people. or maybe the right kind of white people. See what's going on here.
The president's a bad man.
Rocker Ted Nugent isn't afraid of controversial statements, but tonight his remarks have him in trouble again. This time,
well, let's start try that again. What did Nugent have to say here? Whoa, I don't hear him saying anything. Going to skip that one. We had a little problem with it, and somehow I lost my audio on this damn 8 system on this Dell. Every once in a while, the audio just cuts off. I'll go back and use my old-fashioned one. Well, here's a funny one. South Africans now demand government cut ties with Israel. The Jews all excited about getting apartheid dumped down there in South Africa. Well, the worm is turning now. The calls for South African government to cut ties with Israel were repeated when thousands of protesters gathered in front of Parliament yesterday. The annual QUDS Day protest, organized locally by the local Islamic Unity Convention, attracts 10,000 people, according to police monitoring the event. Whoa, boy, do we love race mixing. IUC Chairman Ahmad Qasim handed a memorandum to the Department of International Relations and Cooperations. It demanded that the Israeli ambassador, Arthur Link, be expelled from South Africa and the South African ambassador to Israel, Siza Nogomamani, be recalled. The department's parliamentary liaison officer, Soraki Matsibi, signed and received the memorandum. So they're serious down there. It read, quote, there can be no normal relations and cooperation with a racist entity. Racism is terrorism. I thought the blacks were pretty terroristic down there, too. I guess when they murdered their own by putting tires around their neck and setting them on fire, that's brotherly love. Qasim told the gathering, Zionism is racism and therefore a crime against humanity. It is worse than apartheid. Well, then you better bring apartheid back. Protesters comprised a range of voices, refugees, school learners, Muslims, Christians, and even a few Germans. Subur Noor from Somalia, who has lived in Cape Town for 15 years, walked alongside his compatriots. He wanted the Israeli military to, quote, realize they are killing humans who are like them, unquote. Well, that's not what the Jews think. Quote, they are killing innocent children, but Israel won't be killing our brothers and sisters forever. One day Palestine will be free, unquote, said Noor. He added, Palestinians are our Muslim brothers and sisters. When someone kills a Muslim, we all feel the pain. Wow. Learners from the Trafalgar High School, located on Rowland Street near Parliament, also participated in the protest. Murphy Nagaga, 16, said that they wanted to show our school is against the killing of Palestinian children. We only have a lot of killing here in South Africa. We got plenty of it here in our country. We don't need to get excited about it someplace else. Quote, I watched the news at home and it was heartbreaking to see children killed. I'm marching to stop what's going on, said Nagaga. Well, South Africa's got a very high crime rate. I guess those people don't understand that. It'd be like people in Chicago jumping up and down about Israel, the blacks in Chicago, as they're shooting each other and drive-bys all over the place, man. Pot shouldn't call the pan black. Okay, in case you didn't hear the announcement the other day, this phone number, our national number now, 559-670-1473 is the main number. We're going to try to change it every couple of days and make the messages shorter. We have another number up there. It's 641-715-3800. press 56890, then pound. But you see, that's just going to refer you over to the other 1473 number, and the one here, 267-5036, is gone. That went with our new arrangement here with our server. So pass the word. Every couple of days, I'll change that message. All right? Right. Well, let's go back to Carlos Porter's new book, Carlos Whitlock Porter, who lives in Belgium, I believe it is. And his book, Satires. This is from his chapter entitled On Christianity, Forgiveness, Christian Style. I've decided to renounce National Socialism and become a Bible-believing Christian. The story of this extraordinary conversion is as follows. War is a universal constant of human history. Since people fight even when there is no need to do so, and since races and nationalities are being mixed on an unprecedented scale, and since natural resources are running out, it follows that the 21st century will be an epoch of unprecedented racial and national conflict. Thus, if we wish to survive instead of allowing other people to kill us, we must be guided by a philosophy which makes a virtue of mass killing. Now, if revisionists are correct, and there is no doubt that they are, the National Socialists did not advocate or practice mass killing, except as reprisals in guerrilla warfare, and apparently have very little experience in the matter. Further, it is obvious that National Socialism offers no justification for mass killing, but that Christianity does. For instance, three Turks, the children of a convicted pimp and indicted drug pusher, burnt to death in a suburb of Lübeck, Germany, allegedly by Nazis. Result, indignation from Christians. 926 adult Germans and 28 children killed by foreigners the year before, including a family of five Germans killed by a Turk in another suburb of the same city that same year. Result, no reaction from Christians. 300,000 white Christian children burnt to death at Dresden by white Christian bomber pilots on a Christian holiday, Shrove Tuesday. Ash Wednesday, 1945, when it was coldly calculated that the maximum number of children would be on the street in their carnival costumes, trying to forget the war. Result, no need to apologize. No need for the Queen of England to lay a wreath. Not even a single rose on the monument. An inscription referring to the British role in this tragedy was chiseled away. 300,000 Iraqis burnt to death in a carnival of killing by white Christian bomber pilots. Result, overwhelming endorsement by Christian churches as a fulfillment of biblical prophecy. 200,000 British soldiers cornered at Dunkirk and allowed to escape because Hitler was an admirer of the British. Result, no appreciation from Christians. Christian tourists visit cities they have destroyed, burning hundreds of thousands of civilians to death in Germany, Japan, Europe, and feel no guilt. Germans feel guilty for things they never attempted or even thought of. Germans are fools. Since the National Socialism offers no justification for mass killing, and since Christians have the best philosophy of mass killing, it is not surprising that Christians are the world's best mass murderers, rivaled only by the Jewish communists. A principal reason for the failure of National Socialism to attract adherents is its lack of hypocrisy. National Socialists state openly that conflict is a law of nature, and adopt a sporting attitude. May the better man win. May the best country win. May the better race win. Christianity suffers from no such defect. Hitler said the prerequisite for successful action is the courage and the will to be truthful. Christians know that truth is of no importance. what counts as doing the will of God, as interpreted by Christians. God walks with me and talks with me and tells me I am his own. I was talking to him just yesterday. Incidentally, he gave me a very nice autographed picture of himself, which is visible to those with great faith. Make sure your check is good. And he tells me I have come into a considerable parcel of highly desirable real estate, the world. We're having trouble getting clear title. There are squatters on the property. Everybody else in the world. Proceeds have been protracted 3,000 years, but there can be no doubt I will come into my inheritance any day now. In the meantime, of course, the legal technicalities aside, it is clear that the squatters have no moral right to occupy my property. In the 16th century, Spanish Christians exterminated the native population of Haiti through slave labor, and then discovered a tribe on a nearby island whom Columbus described as loving each other as themselves. A peculiarity of this tribe of ignorant savages was their extraordinary devotion to the memory of their departed kinsfolk. The Spanish embarked 40,000 of them on board ship, promising to transport them to heavenly shores, where they would be reunited with their departed friends and relatives, and then took them to Haiti, enslaved them to death, as a result of which the entire tribe became extinct. As a National Socialist, I would consider this an example of the manner in which the idiocy of religious belief is exploited by criminals for material gain. But as a Bible-believing Christian, I can raise no objection, for it is not written. For is it not written, whomsoever the Lord our God shall drive out from before us, them will we possess? Why should anyone feel guilty about a successful crime? For it is not written. Remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. That's in Deuteronomy. Let Hitler capture his enemies and let them go because he admires them. Christians know that their enemies are to be destroyed, for it is not written, spare ye not her young men, destroy ye utterly all her host. Christianity is a religion of race suicide. The New Testament grafted onto a religion of racial and religious mass murder, the Old Testament. In the past, I attacked this as immoral and was rebuked by Christians on the grounds that God is the source of all morality. His actions cannot be immoral. I now accept this as correct. Or, putting it another way, one can just as easily take the murder bits for oneself and preach the suicide bits to others. That's the Christian way. Why not? Let's now take Christ's famous injunction to castrate ourselves for the heaven, kingdom of heaven's sake. It is sometimes alleged that the passage is a deliberate mistranslation by Jews working on the King James Bible, but that's not true. No one needs a Jew to translate the New Testament Greek. St. Origen castrated himself on the basis of the Greek text, but also had a knowledge of Hebrew. The Russian Orthodox sect of Skopje castrated themselves on the basis of the Russian and Romanian text. The Latin text translated by St. Augustine is even more explicit than the English. The Catholic Church has consistently condemned the practice of self-castration while engaging in the castration of choir boys for centuries to sing soprano in the Sistine Chapel. The 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica calls eunuchs the artistic glory and moral shame of the papal choir. Since the Pope was declared infallible in 1870, and since the trade in castrated choir boys continued until 1878, the practice was prohibited in the Papal States in 1870, and the castrati were eliminated from the papal choir by Pope Leo XIII in 1878. The last actual castration was reportedly performed on Alessandro Moreschi in 1865. we may assume that the practice was stopped not on moral grounds, but as a financial measure. It was illegal in the rest of Italy, so there were hefty bribes to be paid to middlemen and poor parents, in addition to which many boys died of this surgery, giving rise to an unacceptable percentage of spoiled goods. Thus, it is the opinion of the highest authorities of Christendom, indeed an infallible authority, that while we may not castrate ourselves for the kingdom of heaven's sake, we may castrate others for the kingdom of heaven's sake. Blessed are the meek, for they shall be enslaved, castrated, burnt alive by Christians. Now, if the practice was abolished on financial grounds, it may presumably be instated, perhaps it could be applied in a spirit of Christian love and forgiveness to the abortionists, mostly Jewish, who have killed 50 million children, mostly white, since 1973, to the homosexual rapists, virtually 100% Negro, who infest our integrated prison system, to the government officials who integrated our prison system, to the millions of child molesters who infest our cities, to the lawyers, psychiatrists, and judges who release them again to prowl our streets, to the pimps and promoters who peddle freaks like Prince and Michael Jackson as role models for our children, and to all those who got us into world wars and advocated the sterilization of the German people. There's another reason for my decision to come to Jesus. My mother died 9 years ago and left 2 trusts for the Christian education and maintenance of my 4 children attending Catholic schools. Since the will calls for a joyful Bible study, something impossible to define in a court of law, and since the trustee is a Bible-believing Christian, which is to say a thief and a liar, we've never gotten a penny from either trust in 9 years. Nobody's Bible study is ever joyful enough. Lawyers are useless. Maybe Jesus can get me a buck or two. I know someone else this happened to, too, that a fellow who was very much a white racist, but also an atheist in San Diego. He'd been there for years, and I should remember his name, but I forget. They put a Christian in charge of his couple of million dollars after he died, and they twiddled it away and gave a lot of it to Madeline Murray O'Hare, who twiddled it away, and so that's the way that works. Did you ever wonder why new supermarkets are built right next door to supermarkets that have gone bankrupt? It's because the money is borrowed. If I borrow 90% of the money for a project and make 10% per year, I've doubled my money. If it's not profitable, I repudiate the loan. This probably accounts for 90% of all economic activity, most of which serves no purpose other than to destroy the environment and provide short-term employment for non-whites until they get on welfare, which takes them a while. The wonderful thing about debt is, no matter how much you have, you can always acquire more. All you have to do is to promise to pay more interest. If a small town wants to put in a sewer system, do they pay for it out of taxes? Of course not. They hold a bond drive. If interest rates are 4%, they apply the tax revenues of the interest for 25 years and borrow 25 times as much money. To pay off the principal would require tax increases of thousands of percent. This system makes everybody happy. The taxpayers get a sewer system and don't have to pay for, and the lenders get a return back by taxing power of the state. The insolvency of the system doesn't bother them. Now, studies have shown that to the average white idiot, the characters in his favorite TV programs are more real to him than his own family and friends. He cares more about TV than the future of his children. When he loses his job because his company has moved to China, he can't get another because he's not a homo or some other species of protected wildlife. He uses his unemployment money to pay the light bill and watches more TV than ever. There was no TV in South Africa until 1975 because they couldn't decide what language it was supposed to be in. Afrikaans, or English. 20 years of TV was all it took to make the toughest whites in the world, the Boers, efface themselves from history like beer spilled on a bar. This will only stop when there is no more money to pay the light bill. When that happens, the influence of TV will vanish in a second. Viewers all over the world will awaken as from a hypnotic trance, literally. This can only happen in a financial depression. Thus, it's the duty of every racially aware person to bring about a depression as quickly as possible. Remember what Tommy says? Worse is better. That means we must all borrow as much money as possible. Of course, it would be defeating the purpose of such an exercise to pay back the principal. That won't cause the debt bubble to burst. And it would be stealing to use the money for our own selfish pleasures. Besides, anything we buy with our ill-gotten gains will be seized by the bailiffs. So the trick is, we borrow the money from the Jewish-owned finance companies, promising to pay high rates of interest. Divert the money to the racial struggle in cash contributions. Then default on the loans. If 1,000 racists borrow $1,000 each, that's $1 million. Of course, that's not enough because they can take us to small claims court. So we borrow $10,000. For $10,000, they have to hire a lawyer. That's $10 million Jew bucks for the cause. If it was logical for Pretty Boy Floyd to rob banks because the banks were going broke and the depositors were losing their dough, it is even more logical for white racists to rob finance companies because they have no depositors. They borrow their money from your pension fund, sometimes even overnight. This is the money you'll never see because your company will declare insolvency and start a subsidiary in the Pacific Rim countries or in Central America with the same name. The money is yours already. Why not take it? Look in the paper. $1,000 over the telephone. $10,000 in 24 hours and so on. The system is begging to be ripped off. All industry is being moved to China and will eventually be nationalized. The financial advisors know this, but only care for short-term profits. To them, 6 months is a very long time. If the investment produces a total loss of 2 years or 5 years, they don't care because they'll have sold their stock by then. When the Chinese get ready to blow up the world with technology we sold them, to be paid for using money we lent them, your money, the investment managers will reinvest in American armaments industries and manage their funds from a bomb shelter. Wars are Jews' harvests. Just as whites can play jazz but lack natural rhythm, we can also lie, cheat, steal, even though we lack the innate cunning of the Jew. If anything, we lie better than the Jew, because our lies lack the mentally ill exaggerations which typify Jew lying. Look at the Gettysburg Address. Every sentence contains at least one lie, sometimes two or three. But it has dignity. No Jew could lie like Lincoln. One of the best con men I ever knew was the son of a National Socialist consul in Barcelona. His technique was to take out large numbers of unsecured loans for small sums, which were never repaid. He would agree to anything and sign anything. Proof that Aryans can compete with Jews in any field. Now the trick to robbing your creditors is always owe at least five times your assets. And make sure your assets never exceed whatever it costs to sue you. I know someone whose liabilities were absolutely phenomenal. He had assets of $50,000. He made an offer in compromise for $25,000, which was accepted. Why? Because it would have cost $50,000 to sue him. He would have spent $50,000 defending himself, and there would have been nothing left to collect. I know an accountant who stole $2 million. This was in England, but the accounts were in dollars. There was a perfectly clear case against him. There were 60 witnesses, including myself. There were thousands of false accounting documents bearing his personal signature. There was an oral confession before three auditors. the man who helped him steal the money and divert it to other purposes, the man with the $50,000 in assets described above, turned Queen's evidence in return for civil immunity. The police recommended prosecution. The prosecutors delayed for 3 years because they couldn't be bothered with such small cases, then dropped it because of the age of the offense. The accountant's professional liability insurance wouldn't pay because it didn't cover fraud. Yet the opinion of the liability insurer that the accountant's actions constituted fraud was considered merely an unproven allegation. So the same person is still practicing as a fellow of the Institute of Chartered Accountants, the most highly respected professional body of accountants in Britain. Yet if the same man stole a six-pack of beer, he would be arrested. If he held up a market with a water pistol and took $100, he'd go to prison. There's no truth and no justice in the money system, the political system, or the legal system. I don't think we owe it a duty of truth or justice. I think our duty is to destroy it, not just by any means necessary, but by any means possible. It wasn't necessary to burn 80,000 Iraqis to death while they were attempting to retreat under American promises that they would be allowed to withdraw, but it was done. It wasn't necessary for Americans to burn 1 million Japanese to death while they were trying to surrender for a year, but it was done. It wasn't necessary for the followers of Nelson Mandela to necklace thousands of helpless, harmless blacks in South Africa, but it was done. So I will let the humanitarians lecture me on morals next week. Leave a message. Aryans regard it as honorable to rob banks and die in a hail of bullets, but we regard it as dishonorable to lie on a loan application. How many times does the system lie to you? Who voted to flood America and Europe with non-whites? No one. But the Jews say we live in freedom. That's a lie. How did the Jews get the power to lie? By borrowing, granting themselves credits while manipulating interest rates in their favor. Loan default is only a crime if you make false statements on the loan application, such as going to 10 different finance companies and denying that you have other loans. Make sure they can't trace the money, or every loan will become a substantive event, of offense, in a RICO indictment, another Jewish concoction. Now, when you racists start getting large anonymous cash donations, just remember, see, I don't know nothing about it. See, I pay my debts and I always tell the truth. That's great stuff, man. I like Carlos. That's a good idea out there. Yeah, go out there and borrow $10,000 on an unsecured note and then default. And then put at least half of it into the racial struggle, you know? Sounds good to me. Yeah, I know that Rick Cooper, who has now passed away, a National Socialist who worked in the headquarters with Rockwell for a while, and then he spent the rest of his life out there in Idaho and in the Dells. I guess he was closer to Portland or something like that, yeah. But anyhow, I remember when he was using credit cards to raise money for National Socialism. And he had a lot of them. And he took in a lot of money. They finally caught up to him, but he never went to jail. He never had it. He never paid anything back. So who's dumb around here? Fortunately, they're developed in this last go-around of changing the rules for credit cards. They've gotten into this deal where they can put you in debtor's prison. So you got to look at things a little differently now than it was 10 years ago. They tried to close the loopholes on that stuff. So, yeah, so you're going to have to put your thinking cap on, boys and girls. Reminds me of that Kaiser story yesterday on their radio or TV that they got subprime loans now on automobiles, and they're loaning out these crummy old used cars that maybe a lot of them don't even run right, and they're running up loans of $15,000 with people who have no jobs. And they're getting away with it. They've already, the first few months of this year, have taken in about $2 billion. You see? If you're going to be a thief, you got to be a big thief. Don't think small. You got to be a big one. And you have to have balls of brass, that's true. But I think a lot of you do. So don't waste your time going into a bank with your machine gun Uzi and jumping on the counter. That's the hard way to make a living. Just think, Bob Matthews and the boys in the order waylaid that Brinks truck up there in, I think it was Washington State, I forget now, but anyhow, and allegedly they got $2.5 million, but at the same time the computers were just coming in and hackers were all over the place, and the banks didn't have much defense. If Bob Matthews would have had two or three people that were computer experts, they could have gotten a hell of a lot more money out of a bank and never had a gun. And if they'd have been caught, they'd served maybe 3-4 years in jail instead of getting, you know, 20, 40, 50 years in jail. You see, they do that all the time. Yeah, so anyhow, well, it started to cloud up earlier, and I see now we got a fairly heavy rainstorm outside, so that's going to make the flowers grow a lot more. Well, this was an interesting bit about the pros and cons of Japan. I found Japan to be quite interesting, but I was only there for a few days. Tokyo people are under more stress than people in probably any other city, which explains why people in Tokyo die the earliest within Japan of cardiac arrest. Japan has lots of sexism, racism, nationalism, and ageism. The ageism is so bad you can't even find a job if you get fired in your 40s. You even have to provide a picture of yourself when you apply for a company just so the company knows you're not disfigured or a cripple or something. So Japanese people, well, most prominently Japanese people in Tokyo, are forced to remain exclusively loyal to a single company for the rest of their lives and are under tremendous pressure their whole lives. There's also no work-life balance. Everything you do is work, work, work. Sometimes you don't go home until 10 p.m. There's no concept of overtime pay. After your long day of working, you're expected to go out drinking with the other employees after work. You often work on Saturdays, and take a vacation for yourself is considered looked down upon by the Japanese company. The food, I will admit, however, is the best in the world. There is a reason Tokyo has the highest 3 Michelin stars out of any other city. Japan even found a way to make their version of French food taste better than France. The technology is great, but really, what's all this technology really doing for the world? Too much technology at once is really just making people lazier, putting people out of jobs by replacing them with machines and making them addicted to giving them a short attention span. A huge portion of Japan's strange and bizarre mentality and quirks, I believe, stems from their dependency and addiction to technology. Tokyo basically reminds me of much more technologically advanced New York. It is basically way too overcrowded. Bad weather, hot and humid, or pouring rain and snow. Tiny apartments for outrageously high prices. The subways are efficient, but the whole city stinks as it literally sinks and smells bad. The people are punctual and business-oriented, and they're generally unfriendly and don't smile. The city is so strikingly similar, it's eerie. Okinawa, on the other hand, is incredible. Okinawans live the longest out of the Japanese people. probably because they are right on the beach, by the beach. It's a beautiful paradise, just like Hawaii, except less tourists and less crowded, and they are under less stress and eat much healthier. Well, there you go. If you're going to Asia, you might want to go to Okinawa instead of Tokyo.
Bag?
Shut up, Private Brown, sir!
Bullshit! From now on, you're Private Snowball. Do you like that name?
Yes, sir!
Well, there's one thing that you won't like, Private Snowball. They don't serve fried chicken and watermelon on a daily basis in my mess hall.
Yes, sir!
Is that you, John Wayne? Is this me?
Who said that? Who the fuck said that? Who's the slimy little common shit twinkle toed cocksucker down here who just signed his own death warrant? Nobody, huh? The very fucking godmother said, I'm fucking standing. I will PT you all until you fucking die. I'll PT you until your assholes are sucking buttermilk. What did you use, scroungy little fuck, huh?
Sir, no, sir.
You little piece of shit, you look like a fucking worm. I bet it was you.
Sir, no, sir.
Sir, I said it, sir.
Well, no shit. What have we got here? A fucking comedian, Private Joker. I admire your honesty. Hell, I like you. You can come over to my house and fuck my sister.
I don't know why I put that in there. I just thought it'd be cute. Yeah. Well, let's close out a little bit with the dark side of Henry Ford. A lot of times we hear a lot of good things, but remember, he went over there and built a truck factory for Joseph Stalin, and which was turned into a tank factory the minute the war started. So, anyhow, this is about the Depression and a picture of Henry Ford. Okay, we're ready.
And with hundreds of thousands of unemployed, the number of people on welfare just skyrocketed.
The city was nearly bankrupt, but Mayor Frank Murphy promised no one in Detroit would go hungry. He opened lodges for homeless men, increased the city's relief budget, and licensed 650 unemployed men as apple vendors. But despite hard times and competition from Chevrolet, Ford's assembly lines still made him a profit. His own income in 1930 would be $30 million. As winter approached, he said, "The Depression is a wholesome thing in general. It's a good thing the recovery is prolonged. Otherwise, people wouldn't profit from the illness." He went on to say, "The average working man won't do a day's work if he can get out of it."
I don't think it affected him, really. They read the papers, so I'm sure they knew what was going on. And but whether they were ever affected by bedlines and that type of thing, I simply don't know. The few times I was here with the grandchildren, there were always elaborate preparations made. I remember, I don't know whether he had it made or whether he bought it, a miniature farm. And there was a thrashing machine and a tractor. It was elaborate. He thought that the boys would have a good time playing with these things.
On an April day in 1931, the 20 millionth Ford rolled off the line, and the company quickly sent it on a coast-to-coast publicity tour. With the caravan were Ford cameramen, shooting this footage for a planned advertising film. But in the small towns they toured in the summer of 31, few people were buying cars. A third of the country's Ford dealers had already gone out of business. People could hardly afford to buy parts for their old cars, let alone buy new ones.
You turned
everything imaginable to get by without spending cash. Instead of ordering a box of bolts from Sears Roebuck and Company, you would go out to the old machinery in the yard, take some wrenches and hammers, take these bolts off the machinery so you could reuse them.
The Depression had silently overrun most farm towns long before. Big city papers told of food riots in the Midwest. And now, unemployment in Toledo was a staggering 80%. Mass-producing cars, or grain, or refrigerators, had become easy. But America's farmers and wage earners could no longer purchase the fruits of their labor.
You could get a slab of bacon wrapped in cellophane for 35 cents. You could get a sack of flour. People bred, most black people made biscuits at that time. A 24-pound sack of flour for 29 cents. But where in the hell you was going to get the 29 cents from?
Well, living on the farm, we had absolutely no guarantees that times were going to get better. One tended to believe that this was just destiny at work, that there was nothing you could do personally to resolve the question. It was fate, just like bad weather was fate. Maybe life was better in California or in Oregon, but how are you going to get there? How can you leave friends and family and take off by yourself?
This advertising film would never be released, because by the time it was processed, Henry Ford was planning to close his factories. Most of the marchers were laid-off auto workers, many of them first drawn to Detroit years before by the promise of Henry Ford's $5 day. When they reached Ford territory at the Dearborn City line, police ordered them to turn back.
One of the leaders of the march got up and made a statement, said, "Well, here we are. We've come this far. Should we turn back or should we go forward in a big, huge track? Oh, let's go forward, you know."
The crowd surged up Miller Road toward the Rouge as police fired volleys of tear gas. Marchers unleashed a hail of scrap metal and frozen mud on retreating police. At gate 3, firemen slowed the advance with freezing water. Harry Bennett himself charged out of the plant and was knocked senseless by a rock.
My memory is that people start running like crazy. And I didn't know what was happening, but I know of one thing, that the tear gas, I didn't even realize they were shooting.
I saw 3 individuals fall. I saw Joe DeBlasio, I saw Coleman Lenny, I saw the one, Curtis Williams, a black guy, get shot.
Police and Ford guards opened fire from inside the Rouge.
He was up on the, like, on the fence, and he seen me. I was on the Miller Road, and he yelled to me, "Anna, Anna, they got me."
And a New York Times photographer had been shot, many of them in the back. 4 men died instantly.
I came there when the air was full of tear gas and the people were shaking the ice off of their clothes from the water hoses that the fire department had turned on them, and some people were crying. But experiences like that, it's
it really tested people. It brought out some wonderful quality as I think of it. Gee.
The American bargain lay shattered on Miller Road. Within days, Ford's guards stockpiled tear gas and ammunition at the Rouge and fortified Henry Ford's home with machine gun emplacements.
Well, that's the way it goes. It'll happen again, only it'll be a lot worse this time. Yep, but don't ever kid yourself. The ruling class and the bankers will use any kind of device or weapon, kill as many people that have to be killed. So it'll be kill or be killed again. It's coming. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow. No, I won't be back tomorrow. I'll be back Moonsday. Yeah, Moonsday. And then Tuesday, Sling Blade said he's dropping by. How about that? Okay. 14-5, and just keep an eye on these big shots, man, because they're crying because, they're going to leave the country because you want tax money, you know. It's okay to tax the hell out of the middle class and destroy the middle class, but don't tax us big shots and corporate people and the CEOs. We're going to leave the country, and then we're going to go over there and build plants and hire people over there. Well, there's only one way to solve that problem. Say, look, we're going to put tariffs up all around here, and if you're going to leave the country, you're going to stay out of the country. You're not going to be able to deal with the country. We don't want you no more. You're supposed to be an American company based in some other country? Bullshit.
Which